And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Patrick Mooney. We get to talk about the on-fire Chicago Cubs today, to be starkly contrasted with the down-in-the-dregs horrible Cubs of the last episode, because, you know, clearly it can change that quickly. I kid, of course. But the Cubs did win a couple in San Francisco. They've now won the first two at home against the first place Pirates. They go for the sweep today. We're recording Thursday morning, but given the season's history, I think we can go ahead and presume for the purposes of this recording that the Cubs lost tonight because they're going for a sweep. So we know that they will not win. I kid. It's a immovable object meets an unstoppable force because Marcus Stroman is starting tonight for the Cubs, and he's been more or less unbeatable this year outside of Minnesota. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Maybe, you know what, let's start there if you don't mind real quick, Mooney, because Jed Hoyer talked about sort of the Marcus Stroman stuff, the comments that Stroman made that we talked about in the last that we talked about last week with Stroman making some comments about wanting to make sure that folks knew that he wanted to engage the Cubs in extension talks, and sort of our perspective was that's understandable, but it still seems very early for that. It'd be surprising if the Cubs never talked to him before making a trade decision in July, but that's just, it's just hard to see it as a conversation for here in mid-June. And I think Jed Hoyer kind of spoke to that topic, albeit briefly, so maybe that can sew things up.
We can start with the scene in the Wrigley Field dugout before Wednesday's game. Jed Hoyer typically speaks with the media formally once a homestand, and that got sort of rained out the day before. And so there's a big group of reporters, and it's like just 15 seconds of awkward silence. And so finally I was just like, have you tweeted back at Stroman yet? And he laughed and said, I don't tweet. And then our colleague John Greenberg said, well, there is that account out there, and I think Jed
it's got one tweet.
Yes, thank you. We all assume that's a Theo Epstein production, but long way of saying, like, this is just weird, like, this is unusual. And even some of the mechanics of it as well, I asked Jed, you know, going back to the Jeff Samardzija, Matt Garza days, all the way up through a separate selling cycle with Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Javier Baez, like, have you ever negotiated a contract extension this deep into the season? And off the top of his head, he couldn't recall, but he didn't want to definitively say it never happened. And there's was no, like, real time reporting at that time about, you know, the Cubs trying to, you know, make a last ditch effort with any of those guys. And I think even if
the only, just to comment in, the only deal I can think of was like the Starlin Castro extension, which was in August, but that's an entirely different situation because it wasn't a walk year guy. It's just a totally different
exactly
situation.
And, you know, the Ian Happ was technically in season, but Hoyer viewed that more as just a natural outgrowth of the very extensive conversations they had in spring training. So it's like, if the Cubs didn't do that for, you know, Anthony Rizzo, who made it known he didn't want to do it, you know, Javier Baez was very close to a nine-figure contract for the Cubs, and then the pandemic happened, and then they pulled the offer, and Javi never really complained about that, ever. We're just looking at a track record here that suggests the Cubs are not going to seriously engage Marcus Stroman at this point, and you know, what I wrote, and this is not a direct quote from a Cubs official, this is just more my vibe of they view this as bidding against yourself rather than exclusive negotiating window. So it's a really odd way to talk about a team that's only 4.5 games out of first place. And it's also kind of unusual framing for a pitcher who has outperformed the team's very high expectations when they signed him. And a pitcher who has repeatedly acknowledged how much the club has helped put him in a position to succeed. Like, this has been a really great partnership, and it could continue in the future. I just don't really see, like, some sort of last-minute in-season deal coming together. Like, that would surprise me, but I was also shocked when they got an Ian Happ deal done, too. So, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, everything is impossible or extraordinarily unlikely until it happens. And perhaps some year there will be the right circumstances for a deal like that. I mean, I think about how obvious it was last year by the end of the year that Drew Smyly and the Cubs were going to get together on a new deal. And even when it was that obvious, it still took till when? Late December to get a deal together?
I think it was like Christmas Eve almost, like when it was finalized. So, but yeah.
I mean, this is an organization that prioritizes optionality over almost anything. And we see that in every layer of their various decision makings. And so that's the part that's, I would think, that's why I think I'm sure they're going to want some information from him and his camp in late July, because they're going to want to know, like, oh, if they've got some, you know, say they're 5, 6, 7 games out and they've got some meaningful trade offers, well, let's just see, you know, what would you do today, if, just so that you're at least know what you're deciding among. That seems logical to me. But like you said, going whole out right now, it just does feel like bidding against yourself, especially at a time when Stroman himself, for as much as he may want to remain with the Cubs, he has no reason to be offering a discount here in June. Just, it wouldn't make sense for him. I wouldn't advise him to. And so that's kind of where we leave it. Odd all the way around, like you said, including the fact that it doesn't feel like the kind of thing that's going to become a distraction or carry on or become this, like, it was an interesting discussion, but it doesn't feel like it has that same energy that these things can sometimes have, where it's like, uh-oh, organization against player, and they're trying to perform, and I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we'll see if, like, there's any carryover in terms of the narrative tonight for Stroman's start, but I usually have a pretty decent pulse on these things, and I don't feel like it's going to. Like, I feel like it's just going to be another game, and hopefully he pitches well. So like I said, Cubs going for the sweep with that Stroman start. A couple very good games against the Pirates, very high scoring. You know, I would note for folks who may get overly exuberant about the offensive piece of this that it did feel like a couple games where a lot of the bounces that hadn't been going the Cubs' way for many months did go their way in this one, both in terms of some balls finding holes, but also hits getting down in the big moments when, you know, for months we talked about how that just never seemed to happen. So that's good. You know, that's encouraging that they were stepping up to the moment, putting balls in play. But as we know, the balls don't always fall. And so I would be cautious anyway, because it's only two games, but I'd be cautious in these two games in particular to be like, ah, Cubs offense is finally unlocked. And to that end, we could talk about that broadly if you want, but to that end, I wanted to note this was all happening against the backdrop of Cody Bellinger finally beginning his rehab assignment with the Iowa Cubs. And what was most interesting, I think, not necessarily surprising, but definitely the most interesting, is that he played first base for both of those games. And both David Ross and Jed Hoyer demurred on the opportunity to say, ah, that's just about keeping his knee fresh. It's just about getting his bat back. Like, they said that stuff, but they also were pretty clear that the between the lines commentary was, yeah, he's going to be playing some first base for us when he comes back. That was partly an acknowledgement that Mike Tauchman has been a nice fill-in. But I think maybe the bigger piece is that first base still has been a black hole for the Cubs offensively. And while it made all the sense in the world to bring Matt Mervis up when the Cubs did, because first base was already a black hole at that point, to give him this look, to give him, he's approaching that 100 plate appearance mark, which is, I think, when you do, you know, we see that all the time with this front office set over the last 10 years. It always seems like they don't make any kinds of decisions until about 100 plate appearances for a guy. And that's when I think they feel like you have enough information that you could either understand what levers to push with a guy on your team or send him back to the minors with information, knowing what he needs to work on. And so to me, I see these two things kind of coming together at the same time. And I don't think it's a bridge too far to connect those dots and say, oh, I think probably we're going to see Bellinger coming up at some point playing first base. And it might be the time that Matt Mervis heads back to Iowa to continue his development.
Brett, I think you nailed it there. I think that is all of those wheels are very much in motion. And it is refreshing when the Cubs are straightforward and acknowledge all of those factors, instead of, say, the song and dance we do with, like, say, a Suzuki's injuries.
I knew
or,
you were gonna,
or not injuries. As soon as you said that. Like, you know, Matt Mervis hasn't produced, period. Like, that's understandable. That's not, doesn't foreclose the possibility that he can come back up even later this season and just start hitting home runs again. But he hasn't done it thus far. And the Cubs don't have the type of lineup or the amount of runway where you can just, like, keep carrying that and rolling him out there. And so I think we've continually seen this front office trying to push those buttons and David Ross kind of pushing for, you know, certain elements to his roster. I mean, we can cycle through the Mervis, Morel, Madrigal, back and forth, stuff like that. And I do think the Bellinger, like, long-term big picture discussion, like, it's not too early to, like, have that. Like, I do think that is, like, a part of this year. And sometimes you and I are guilty of jumping too far ahead, but, like, this is a big one. When you look at the Cubs' weaknesses going forward and, like, where they have to address things, and also, like, the profile of the type of free agent that they like, there's a lot there with Cody Bellinger that matches up. And now maybe Scott Boras takes him to the open market, and there's one owner out there that just gives him an offer he can't refuse. But, like, if there isn't, I would imagine the Cubs are very much going to be in play there. And we've seen, whether it's Mervis's struggles or, you know, some of the other guys who've come from Iowa and haven't, like, delivered, the Cubs are not in a space where they can just count on Pete Crow Armstrong to, like, be their everyday center fielder for the next 7 years. Like, that's just, that would be foolish, to be honest. And so Scott Boras mentions these things in passing, like, oh yeah, Cubs fans haven't even seen this guy's a Gold Glove first baseman too. And, like, as you know, Brett, there's no reason to move someone off center field until you absolutely have to. But this particular set of circumstances sort of demands it.
That's it right there for me. I would say I'm about as hardcore as a Cubs fan can get on not moving guys down the defensive spectrum unless you really have to, if they are a capable defender higher up. And with Cody Bellinger, it's not just that he's capable center fielder. He's one of the rare, very good defensive center fielders who projects to play there for many more years. And if he kind of finds an equilibrium between his MVP form and what the last couple of years are, he's a plus bat too. And I think you would, in a vacuum, you would just never, ever, ever say, we want to sign this center fielder to be our first baseman, because that is a one-way road to being massively inefficient, to screwing up your budget in a million different ways. And so that's not what this conversation is. Instead, it's one of these things where it has a lot of different inputs, like Mooney said, where there's the current discussion, which is, okay, you know, you're protecting the knee a little bit. There's the black hole of performance at first base. There's Talkman. There's getting Bellinger's bat back. There's getting him back sooner rather than later because there's the deadline coming. There's all these things that inform what's happening now. Makes sense. And then that's just one piece of the bigger picture discussion that you're talking about, which is, at what point do the Cubs think about, you know, maybe Pete Crow Armstrong is coming. Maybe we would even say probably that he's, you know, we know that that's a even better defensive center fielder probably today than Bellinger would be. But you don't know that he's going to be ready next year. You don't know that he's going to come up and stick. You don't know what that development period is going to look like. And so it's very hard for me, as much as I love PCA as a prospect, he can't be the reason that you would foreclose the possibility of extending Cody Bellinger, especially when he can play first base and he could be that guy for you for many years at a spot where it's not like the Cubs, other than Matt Mervis, and that's a TBD situation, they don't have a big thumping first baseman prospect that they definitely know is coming and is definitely, you know, the next Anthony Rizzo. And so I think when you put all that stuff together, that's at least enough for me to say, yeah, those are conversations the Cubs should have. And would it be enough to preclude trading him if they fall out of it? I doubt it. If there's a good offer there and he's performing, and especially if he's back in center field, I think they take a good offer and go with it. But if that doesn't happen, if they stay close, if the offer isn't there, million other reasons, I think you approach that early part of the offseason and you say, look, we know that you might get center field offers out there. And by center field offers, I mean not to play the position. I mean the price tag that comes along, the Brandon Nimmo 8-year, whatever. Cubs aren't going to do that. I do not see that happening. But if those offers don't come, like you said, then maybe they pay a little bit more than you would for a first baseman, you know, because obviously this is a guy who doesn't have to play that spot and he can buy you additional time for PCA to come up and adjust if that happens. Or if it doesn't, he just stays in center field. And so there's a lot that goes into it, that this is a topic where I have softened considerably over the last month, or even as he's been absent. I think I didn't see a realistic path to them sticking together. And increasingly, because of the Mervis didn't come out immediately thumping, or because I've been reminded this year about the adjustment process for young players like PCA, there's just been a lot of reasons over the last month and a half that I'm like, you know, maybe we kind of stick with this conversation. Not the least of which is Cubs don't have a ton of left-handed power. And we've seen how much that hurt them to not have it over this past month and a half. So, yeah, I'm on board for that conversation. I think for now, let's get him back and see how he looks and make sure there aren't... You know, this was a guy who was... Clearly, his performance was sensitive to physical limitations. You know, that was the story that was sold by Scott Boras and co., that he was going to be good again if he just got healthy. And so you want to see how he performs now post this bone bruise in his knee.
Yeah, and I think you also have to look at, too, like, by 2024, Jed Hoyer and David Ross are going to be towards the end of their contractual windows. And, like, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong has a cool nickname and a lot of, you know, cool highlights on social media, but, like, he doesn't have a lot of high-level experience. He has a lot of maturing and growth to do. And are the 2024 Cubs going to be, like, the ideal place to do that? Probably not. I mean, maybe we saw this year, you know, this wave from Iowa was not exactly what we saw in 2015 when those guys came up and just nailed it. And Cubs don't really have those prospects. I mean, we look at the Reds and Pirates and kind of their systems and where they're trending. Like, I just don't know the Cubs have that. And so I think you can play Cody Bellinger in center field for a while, because the Cubs are really not in a position where they can just be handing over everyday jobs at one of the most important positions on the field to guys who are like 22 years old and with like 2 months of experience at AA Tennessee. Like, and you know, if Matt Mervis was here or in position when the Cubs traded Anthony Rizzo, sure, you can give him a couple months and just see what happens. And maybe you roll into 2022 with Matt Mervis as a prominent option. But that is not this team right now. Not to say it's a good team, but it's a team with a lot more pressure now. And that's kind of what's on the horizon here. The Cubs are in this in-between stage, but by opening day next year, that's absolutely going to be a prove-it year here. So Cody Bellinger is not a particularly loud guy in the media, but he's kind of the center where all of these stories kind of come together, and you can see some of the different avenues the Cubs might take.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So, bringing it back to this year, and even zooming in closer than that, we've got these two wins for the Cubs over, you know, the NL Central leading Pirates. Look, I loved the wins, and I acknowledge that it's very important for the Cubs to win these games right now. What I try to fight back against inside myself is this idea that, like, that they are actually playing the best team in the Central right now. I don't think they are. Or that, like, them climbing to 4.5 games back of that team right now tells the story of where they are competitively. I don't think the front office looks at it like that. I think they do evaluate, you know, how close you are in the division is going to matter when it comes to the buy-sell decision. But I think there also has to be a conviction that this is a team that can play a lot better in August and September to justify the opportunity cost of not selling. I think the buying side of things, I don't see this year's Cubs team, no matter what happens between now and the deadline, being this like ultra aggressive buyer that's giving up tip top prospects for rentals. And that I don't see that. And so there's not a lot of cost there to me. If they add a couple relievers at the deadline, I think they've got the quality prospect depth to be able to pull that off without a ton of pain. I think the real cost would be in not selling. And that isn't me saying, please, I hope the Cubs sell. I mean, I've tried to be crystal clear from going back to October of last year. I desperately do not want them to sell this year. I want them to hang around. They don't have to be great, but hang around, stay in the race, keep it interesting into August and September. But the reality is, if that's not going to happen, they have to sell. They have to take advantage of the opportunity to bring in whatever they can. It's the same cycle again and again, but it's the same cycle for a reason, because that's what you do in an otherwise lost season. And so take all that together, put it in the blender, and I look at these last two games and I say, I've enjoyed them as a fan. I like the keeping open the potential of this crazy 10-game winning streak that totally flips my thinking back to where it was 2 weeks ago. But I'm trying not to let these games run away with me. And I'm curious for you. I mean, I know you well enough by now to know that you likewise wouldn't have looked at these two games and said, ah, wait a minute, I think they're going to be buyers. But I do wonder, what does that look like for you, to where, you know, we might have to look back at things we said last week and the week before and be like, you know, actually, maybe they are putting themselves in position. What would realistically have to happen?
I think you're onto something there. Like, we have to be open to, like, different possibilities. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I go back to end of April in DC, and like, I asked Carter Hawkins about adding at the trade deadline. And like, that was very much in play, like something to be looking forward to at that point. And then, you know, you let a couple more weeks pass on the calendar, and you have to realistically look at it, like, with this team's record, you know, no chance they're adding, which means they're selling. And I do think there's a gray area here and a nuanced, difficult conversation that the front office and the coaching staff will have, that, you know, you kind of know it when you see it. If they can reorganize the bullpen, if the offense is hitting, if the rotation continues to churn out quality starts. I mean, Justin Steele coming back on Saturday is a big part of that. Kyle Hendricks continuing to do professor-like things. Everyone else staying healthy. Marcus Stroman tweeting, you know, things like that. As long as that happens, and as long as no team in the Central goes on like a 10-game winning streak, like, Jed does not want to sell, like, period. Like, it's not going to be enjoyable or comfortable for him to have to go down that road again. And if you can keep chipping away at this, I thought it was interesting in Anaheim last week, Jed Hoyer brought up the stat of, you know, we're 0-5 at home with the opportunity to sweep a series. Like, they are very much rewinding the schedule here and, like, circling, like, the moments that could have been. And so if you sweep today, if, you know, the Brewers don't get their act together, but there's just a point where you can't, in our shoes or in their shoes, like, ride the wave too much, because there are going to be these moments. Like, I'm circling that 4-game series in Milwaukee before the All-Star break. That was kind of their, that is the place around the same time when Jed Hoyer decided to sell in 2021. And if the Brewers do Brewers things where they, you know, win like 4-1 run games in a row, and then the Cubs have to go to Yankee Stadium, where they just got destroyed last year, and then you go into the All-Star break, like, you know, it's hard to see a path back. But if they can continue to win series and, like, look coherent as a unit, I don't think that's off the table. I think they're going to really try and wait a very long time and prepare for both possibilities, and then kind of see where they're at in late July. And what they did in San Francisco and what they're doing here are essential parts of just giving themselves a chance to make it hard on Hoyer's group.
Yeah, we've said before that in the last couple of years, it was probably the case that the front office was eager for... eager is the wrong word. The front office was accepting of an excuse to sell. Whereas this year, I think they are eagerly looking for an excuse not to sell. And I, you know, I said what I said, and I stick by that. As I evaluate the situation, I think it's still far more likely than not that they do sell. I think, as you said, we do have to remain open to the possibility that this sport teaches you every year that you just are... we're bad at predicting things. Like, we just, and I think even those in the game know that. I think they know. It's not like Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins would sit down right now and say, well, we know what's going to happen over the next month and a half. They might say, we've got a 70% confidence that it's going to be X or Y. And we could say the same, but that doesn't mean that the other thing doesn't happen sometimes. And so that is why I am saying, if the Cubs complete the sweep today of the Pirates, they are definitely going to be buyers of the deadline. <Just kidding. laughs>
Well, we can say that, and then the Orioles could come in and sweep the Cubs, and that's a really good team, too. Exactly. So it's like, you know, can they... There are some internal solutions coming here with Steele and Bellinger, and you're absolutely right about, like, the default setting for this front office. I like the way you put it there of really looking for reasons not to sell. But at a certain point, it will become sort of obvious, and we're just not there yet. And that's...
Yeah, you know. Yes. Yes, it's like they don't have the reasons now. I don't think, you know, if the deadline was tomorrow, I don't think there's any way they could talk themselves into not selling. But there's time, you know. It's as they said, it's not early forever. And even if it's not early now, that doesn't mean it's late. You know, there's a big meaty middle here that the Cubs could win a lot of games, change some thinking. So I'll just I'll leave my heart open, not too open, because then it stings when they inevitably do some bullshit. But I'll leave it a little open for this weekend at least. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Patrick Mooney. Get his at The Athletic. Cubs wrap up with the Pirates today. Then, as Mooney said, they get the Orioles this weekend with Justin Steele back on the mound. That is the plan. You know, we'll see it when we see it, but that is the plan. And, you know, who knows? He comes back, and if he looks fresh, and if Kyle Hendricks is actually, you know, stabilizing himself as a solid back-end guy, I mean, that's a pretty dramatic improvement right there. And Bellinger returning, as long as he's no worse for the wear at the plate, that's actually a kind of different team than the one that has been maybe starting to improve over the last week. So there's my hopeful take to wrap it with. We'll be back at you on Monday. In the meantime, I hope you have a lovely weekend, and I hope you take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.